director of the Office of Higher Education, Mr. Metzen, to join us at the table, and he has some opening comments he'd like to make to tell us about himself and his life and his goals and whatever. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Senator, and members of the committee. It is an honor for me to be here today, and I'm hoping to earn your confirmation today. And I want to underline earn. That's my objective today, is to give you enough information about myself that you're comfortable with who I am and where we may be going with this Office of Higher Education. And I also like to thank Governor Pawlenty for this opportunity to be here. Obviously, I wouldn't be here if he hadn't appointed me, and that I thank him very much for that. I know that just looking around the room here that you're awfully busy, and I've been around here enough the last few weeks to know that how hectic the schedule is this time of the year, so thank you for a few minutes I'd like to spend with you. But I do think it's important to share my experiences and some of my beliefs, again, so you have a comfort level with the direction the office will be going. And obviously, I'll be very happy to answer any questions you'd have at the end. As to my experiences, we're all a product of our environment, and I grew up about 3 miles from here in South St. Paul, a blue-collar community. The major industry is packing plant, or was, and some really terrible working conditions for people. But the one thing that most of the parents did in that community, they encouraged us to get out of high school, get a degree, and get to higher education. That was the path to a better job. I graduated from South St. Paul, by dating myself here a little bit, but I will, in 1960. And just to give you confidence in my ability, I graduated in the top 50% of my class. Actually, the 51st percentile. And I was so happy. I guess I would have gotten one more D. I would have been at the 49th, and I couldn't go on around saying I graduated in the top 50% of my class. And I'm absolutely confident that a lot of my former teachers are looking down here today and just kind of shaking their head and wondering what's happening to higher ed in the state of Minnesota. I went on to the University of Minnesota and received a degree in elementary education and was fortunate enough to be able to get hired back in my hometown. One of the things I've always tried to do is if a negative happens in your life, try to turn it into a positive. When you grow up in South St. Paul and you're a teacher and you play a little hockey, your only aspiration in life is to be the head hockey coach. On a 4-3 vote, I didn't make it. So I had to reinvent myself, and obviously it turned out to be a great opportunity for me. I went back to the university and received my master's degree and doctorate degree in educational administration. Besides teaching in South St. Paul, I was assistant superintendent, I was a principal, and I spent 18 years as a superintendent of schools. In 1997 and 2003, I was selected by the legislature, met many of you as I was going through the process. I was on the Board of Regents for the past 12 years, and in March, I announced that I would not be seeking re-election. I chaired the Litigation Committee, Educational Policy Committee, Facilities Committee, and I was honored to be on the board chair from 2003 to 2005. And I was also appointed to the Rochester Higher Education Committee and was selected on 2 different occasions to study the higher education system in China. And I came back with that with a whole new look at what's happening in this world and the sense of urgency we need. And countries like China and the commitment they're making to higher education is something that will be with me for a long time. Some thoughts and beliefs. The obvious question, and I see all my friends from the MISCU system, and we had breakfast this morning. I was privileged to have breakfast with Chancellor McCormick this morning and Chair David Olson and starting the process of working together. People probably look at me and think that I bleed maroon and gold. There's a lot of truth to that. I was very proud of being part and going to the University of Minnesota and being the chair. But I want to go on record as saying, first and foremost, I'm an educator, that we must and I will be fair to the Minnesota State Colleges and University, the private colleges, and for the for-profit institutions. This will not be a problem for me. In fact, I've thought of it in terms of somebody probably coaching their son or daughter. that I'm probably going to bend over backwards to be fair and be impartial. My own experience as administrator, I have really found, and this is how I will look at this office and as I work with you and the governor and all the other stakeholders, you will make good decisions if you know what your focus is. And as a school administrator, I always ask myself, what's the best thing for students? Not what's the best thing for a specific institution or specific school. I will be grounded in that as I make recommendations to you, to the governor, and all the decision makers. Another way to measure my faith and belief in principle while I was a superintendent, South St. Paul was one of the first school districts to embrace choice. When people have a choice, there's a greater commitment, and that's good. We are fortunate, Minnesota, that we have so many fine institutions, public and private, offering choice to our young people. So supporting all of education will be very easy for me. I think another component that I could bring to this office, and I've met with Commissioner Segrin, my K-12 background is such that I'm very comfortable in that environment as well. As you know, there's some wonderful programs going on. In fact, you talked about it earlier in the week, the P-20 program. How do we start working, and it's already in motion, to work with our middle school students, getting them ready? It's not how many go on to higher ed, it's how many that finish higher ed should be our goal. And we must do a better job of working with our high schools and preparing these young people to be successful when they go into college or go on to college. Looking to the future, this state has been very successful over the years in educating our citizenry. But in the future, and we see it right now, to get a decent job in this world that pays a living wage, you're going to have education beyond high school. Well, on the Rochester Task Force, we heard an executive from IBM that came in and said how successful IBM has been in Rochester, and they love that community, that if we don't give them the quality of students and the skill sets necessary for their plant, they will leave Rochester. That's the importance of higher ed in this state. The problem we are facing today as a state and as a nation is that we've been good, very good. In fact, this state has led the nation. But in Jim Collins' book, From Good to Great, he maintains the biggest barrier to greatness is being good, and we are good. That is our barrier. That is our challenge. Bill Gates stated another way, success is a lousy teacher. It seduces smart people into thinking they can't lose. This is a race that we must win as a nation, as a state. In closing, again, I want to thank you for this opportunity to present my candidacy to you. In the 3 weeks I've been in the Office of Higher Education, I believe one of the most important jobs I have is not to screw things up.
And find the bathroom.
Find the bathroom. Found that the first. I have found, and if any of you have followed my administrative background, I have very high expectations for people. But I have noticed and observed, and I can tell you without any reservations, there are some wonderful, dedicated staff members there that care very deeply about the Office of Higher Education and the state and our young people. I would be honored to join that team. If I'm fortunate enough to receive your approval, I pledge to you that I'll work very hard to do what's right for students. I believe it is absolutely urgent that we challenge our government, ourselves, and our institutions to be the very best that they can be. The state's future depends on it. In my meeting with the governor and with the office staff at Higher Education and with you, I'm absolutely committed to the old Boy Scout saying, leave the campsite better than you found it. That is my desire and my commitment to you. Madam Chairperson, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much for those comments. The Senate committee has always had a very good working relationship under Ms. Hegard with the Office of Higher Education, and we certainly, you know, expect and hope to continue that relationship. You know, the office has always been very helpful to myself and to our staff, and personally, I'm very excited about you being the new director, and I think we'll continue to do great things.
This is the furthest I've gotten away from Mark and Teresa since I've been in the
You're
Senate. I'm out of my comfort zone. I want to kind of bring them up next to me, but they said it.
I did have a question for you,
sure.
though. Since my school district just lost our superintendent after 3 years, and I'm told that's the average tenure, how did you manage to go for 18 years?
Oh, I fooled them.
You fooled them.
No. We actually...
Is there a change in culture now among superintendents
yes.
than when you were there?
Well, first off, that it was really kind of neat to be able to work in your home community and to be able to give back to where you grew up.
So you had ties.
I had ties there. But more than that, I had some marvelous school board members. And the one thing I've done a lot of coaching at beginning superintendents, and I say that to this group and to the governor. The one thing I've told superintendents, don't ever forget, or new superintendents, don't ever forget who you're working for. I work for the board, and that was my job to work with them and not to be going on a different page or not in alignment with the board wishes.
Any questions? Senator Sharon.
Thank you. Could you tell me what it is that motivates you to to seek this position? It's a sort of a common question, but I'm not really getting at. And because you're thinking that there's something that you can influence or create or participate in, a vision of an outcome as a result of being in this position that you can form or influence. Can you tell me what that is?
Mr.
Well,
Benson.
It's kind of in my DNA, public service, and I want to make a difference, and I want to give back, and I'm passionate about all of education, and somebody once asked me if I had to put a dollar, where would I put it? And don't take this wrong, higher ed people, but preschool early intervention is just huge, but we need this all to work together and almost seamless, and we have to, and that's why I was so excited about your discussion the other day about the P20, that we have to make this more seamless and working together, and I'm excited about joining the effort that's already started before I got here of working with the middle school kids and some of these other things. And so the bottom line is I'd like to make a difference. I recognize that this could be short term depending upon the governor's wishes, but I think that if you work hard enough, care enough, and you're passionate enough, you can make a difference.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm pleased that you have a K-12 background because we are so dependent upon that system for our higher education system, and we do see problems. And I'm just wondering if you, well, it's something you certainly, I would encourage you to continue to work on, but you maybe thought about it already. What do you think could best be done in the K-12 system to prepare those students so that when they are entering college or post-secondary, that they're better prepared?
Well, it's too late when we, I shouldn't say too late. You never give up on kids, and a lot of schools are doing a lot of wonderful remedial programs, but again, some of the exciting things already happening and that you know about is starting to work with the middle school kids. Kids are smart. When they know the standards, what they have to take, and they have some goals out there to getting there, they will take the right courses. But if all of a sudden after their senior year they get their diploma and they find out that a lot of opportunities aren't going to be there for them unless they take some remedial work. So, again, I really look at the seamless process, and I'm excited about trying to work with the Commissioner of Education and see what some things we can do together. A lot of it goes back to good counseling in the high schools, too, and giving kids the right information.
Any other questions? Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Metzen. Senator Sharon commented about the need to or our interest as a committee to see a stronger connection between all systems and that seamlessness. And I would just encourage you, while there has been work done in this area, I think that this committee in particular is very interested in seeing sort of a new priority placed there. And I would be encourage you to have conversations not only within the higher ed jurisdiction, but with your counterparts in K-12 as well, and anything that you can do in that area to help foster the work that we are trying to do would be very much appreciated.
You have my commitment that will happen. It's one of the things that if I am confirmed that what I bring, and that's what I said to the governor, I there has to be a closer link, and I've spent 36 years in that arena, and I'm very comfortable, and I'm very comfortable speaking to superintendents and saying these are some things that just have to be done. And we have to get children successful after high school. And again, what I said earlier, it isn't how many kids enroll in higher ed, it's how many finish it. And we have to do a better job of finishing this thing off and getting people to leave and having a degree or diploma at the next level.
Senator Sharon.
Just one more. I'm appreciating this conversation, this opportunity to have the conversation with you. I am very concerned not only about the seamlessness, which I think is terribly important, the recidivism, the repetition that has to occur to get ready to go to college, but once our students graduate, having a system of higher ed as well that requires an excellence that changes what I see as a trend in terms of our graduates from higher education, and how they are no longer as competitive as they were in the past in the global marketplace. And that when we're looking at leaders in new inventive physiology, for example, we're drawing those graduates from other countries. They're not emerging out of our higher educational system. And so not only do I have an interest in getting more graduates, but that the graduates and the excellence of the graduates that we have restore that when our graduates go out and look for jobs internationally, that as in the past, they've been the first choice. Now that's no longer the case. And I think we have a serious challenge not only about getting students in and having them graduate, but then having excellence in those students in the world. I'd be interested in your reaction
to that. Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And it can't just, we have to hit the parents and citizens to start thinking too that it's a different world we're living in. And we have been good. We've been successful. But this world is changing fast. And as I said earlier, we had a Chinese student that lived with us. I've never seen anybody work so hard in my whole life. And the commitment. And that we need values in this country and in our state that values education. And that and maybe if there's a positive, this economic problem we have in today's world, it's a wake-up call for all of us. We will not be competitive in 20 or 30 years. My grandkids will not be if we don't up the rigor and up the standards and understand. When I grew up, I was competing against probably from people on the Iron Range, which was very easy, but maybe St. Paul or Wisconsin. Today, it's in a global world, especially a goalie. Yeah.
That was your brother and my brother.
Any other questions? Senator Wieger.
Madam Chair, may I make a motion?
Yes. The motion is to confirm the appointment.
I would so move.
Okay, Senator Wieger moves that the appointment of David Metzen as Director of the Office of Higher Education be confirmed. Any more discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
You're on your way to the Senate anytime. Floor.
I'll bring Mark and Tricia with
you. So you said that.
Now, seeing all those chairs up there made me think that the Minsky group would like to come up as a team.
Yeah.
That's a good sign. I would like to acknowledge Chancellor McCormick is in the audience and also the chair of the Minsky Board of Trustees, David Olson. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
Or he was. Is he still here? Yep, there he is. Okay.
Is it in the alphabetical order?
No, it doesn't matter. Sit wherever you want. Sit, boy, girl, boy, girl.
Yeah, we can do that.
They did. Almost. Can't quite do that. What we'd like you to...
We're good.
That's all right. What we'd like you to do is, just maybe one at a time, say a few things about, give us a little information about your background and if you've already been serving on the Minsky board, maybe something that you are proud of that you think you've accomplished or the board's accomplished and some of your future goals. And we'll start with Ms. Dixon.
Hello, my name is Cheryl Dixon, and thank you very much for taking time to hear me tell you why I'd like to be reappointed to the Minsky Board of Trustees. I retired from the Humanities Commission, where I spent 24 years as director a few years ago, and couldn't imagine not getting up at 5:30 in the morning, so I... was really pleased when I was appointed to the Minsky Board and also to the boards of the St. Paul Friends of the Library and the Ramsey County Historical Society. And I still get to get up at 5:30 most days. The Minsky commitment is really, really fluctuates. This week I've had 4 days when I've done things for the Board of Trustees. Other weeks I don't have to do anything. Yesterday I was at a meeting from 8 in the morning until an event till 8 o'clock last night, nonstop. So it can be a huge commitment, but not so demanding that someone who works can't do it. So I have been chair of committees for 5 of the years I've been on the board. The most interesting things that I've done were to find out, first of all, that I didn't know as much as I thought I did. I really thought I understood the system. And when I got there nearly 7 years ago, what I discovered is that it wasn't a system. It was three systems kind of shakily held together. And today I'm happy to say that I really believe we have a functioning system. And I attribute that to great leadership and to real hard work and commitment on the part of the employees of the system. I think this has been really hard to do, and I don't think people imagined how hard it was going to do, but I really believe it's been done. In fact, I hate to use such a trite phrase, and I wouldn't use a national model if it weren't given to this system by outside national agencies, but it is often. They call us a national model in higher education. Two things I'm proud of. One, I've been really involved in technology, and I've been excited to see our online students grow from 2,000 when I got there to 80,000 plus today. I think that's pretty remarkable. And also to be the chair of the committee that monitored our technology initiative and watch our conversion from our old obsolete database to the new one without a hitch. That was like a missile launch. It was so difficult to convert millions and millions of pieces of data at once without a glitch. It was pretty exciting to see it happen. The other thing I've been involved in that I really admire and like a lot is a new accreditation process called the Academic Quality Improvement Program, AQIP for short. And colleges and universities who choose to do so get involved in continuing improvement, much like the Baldrige Awards for businesses. And it's a whole new way of looking at accreditation. When I was with an agency, we got accredited every 5 years, which meant that we worked really hard for 3 or 4 months, and they came and looked at us and said, you're good to go for another 5 years, and then we forgot about it. That's not the case with these AQIP schools, and I think it's really exciting to see people across the board in the institutions dedicated to thinking every single day, how can we do this better? And I'd like to take that kind of pledge for myself to help the board think every time we meet, how can we do this better? And finally, one more thing. I have a grandson now in a Minsky school, and he's on the Student Senate. And he rags me a lot about wondering if I am dedicated enough to students. And I tell him that I am really dedicated to students, but not just him and his generation. My real commitment is to the millions and millions of young kids who are going, or kids and adults, I should say, who are going to be attending Minsky institutions in the future, and seeing that that institution is secure and grows in the right way for the future is my real job. So thank you very much.
We have some very painful days ahead of us. Budget cuts in, you know, both the governor of the House and the Senate in this biennium and next biennium. And do you have any kind of basic principles that you will use, and the others can come in on this too, as to kind of guide your decision-making as a board member when faced with how you're going to make decisions about these budget cuts?
Well, personally, Madam Chair, I really don't believe in across-the-board cuts. I think that being selective is really smart. I think giving presidents the autonomy to make those selections in their own budgets is an important thing for the system to do. And then I think the system needs to be selective and assign priorities. And I would hope that the legislature would see fit to trust the board, to know that we will do this with as much of a view to what is good for the people of Minnesota as we can possibly do. We're in there, and we really care about this system. Thank you.
And finally, what do you think is going to happen with tuition, given this situation? What would be your advice or your role in terms of tuition?
Madam Chair, what I see in my fellow board members is a commitment to holding tuition as much as we possibly can. And I think that, you know, that's weighed with asking more and more and more of our staff who suffered, as you know, terrific cuts a few years ago, had begun to recover and now are going to be put back through a problem again. But I think that the board understands the difficulty for students. We understand that having students with huge debts is not something that we want to have happen. And so while we're looking at the best decisions we can make, I think our eye is always on keeping tuition as low as we possibly can.
Any questions? Senator Wicker.
Yes, Madam Chair, on the application forms and the letter from the governor, there's 7 questions at the end, and then it refers to attachments for answers, but I don't believe we have those answers. They're very good questions as well, and it might be something we could refer to.
Did those questions, that page, not get forwarded to us? That's a very good question, Senator Wicker. I didn't notice that they had essay questions. I don't know if that's new or not. Did you have to do
Madam
essay?
Chair, when we applied to the Citizens Advisory Council, we did answer essay questions, and I didn't bring that folder with me. Does anybody have? Okay. But we did answer essay questions, and they were, I don't remember.
Did you have to answer them 4 years ago?
Yes.
I think
yes.
We usually didn't see them on the form,
this
the essay
is,
questions.
This is something that the Citizens Advisory Council has been doing for many years.
Okay. Senator Wicker, is there any particular question? We'll have to correct that next time and make sure we have those answers, unfortunately. Yeah. Great. Senator Wicker, was there any particular question you wanted to ask?
No.
Okay. Any other questions for Ms. Dixon? Then I'd actually like to officially have Senator Roebling is now chairing the committee because I want to make the motion.
Okay.
All right. Then, Madam Chair.
Senator Pappas.
I would like to move that the appointment of Cheryl Dixon to the Minsky Board of Trustees be confirmed.
On Senator Pappas's motion, is there any further discussion? And if not, all in favor, signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Opposed? No. Okay, the motion passes.
All right, thank you very much.
Turn the chair back over to you.
All right, thank you.
Gavel.
You're off the hook.
Okay, you didn't include him. All right. And you want to introduce yourself to us?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jacob England. I am the student trustee representing community colleges on the Minnesota State College and Universities Board of Trustees. And I'll give you a little background information on myself as I'm very new to the public system. Prior to returning back to college in August of 2007, I had started a band, toured nationally, booked about 600 concerts for the group, signed a major record contract that I facilitated pretty heavily, managed all of our retail operations, both online and in our retail traveling stores with the group. Extensive marketing campaigns were also a big part of my duties. After leaving the music industry for a number of reasons, I went into the mortgage industry, so interesting opportunity in the real estate world. But a position was knocking on my door, and I got in as a loan originator. And in the thick of the thin of whatever was happening in the mortgage industry, I saw it. And when friends were coming and saying, hey, I really want to buy a big house, and said, okay, well, how are you going to pay for it? Well, I don't know. I'll figure it out. So a number of reasons made me leave the mortgage industry, but the two M's are the big reasons, which was money and morals. And if I was going to make any money in mortgage, I was going to have to sacrifice my morals. And those were things that I wasn't interested in doing. So when I went back to college in August of 2007, I went back to Normandale Community College in pursuit of an undergraduate degree in international business and international relations. Right now, I'm about 2 years into that. I'll have my general education finished at Normandale, and I'll move on to the four-year institution starting this fall. And very excited about that. Some qualifications that I have, I was asked by Senator Pappas to come up with this, and I guess in my short term on the board thus far, I was appointed by Governor Pawlenty in July of 2008. Mm-hmm. I've developed a strong relationship with Minnesota State Colleges Student Association and the State Universities Student Association. Great groups, I'm sure you're familiar. But we've developed a good relationship on the leadership level, but as well as I make sure to attend as many other conferences and assemblies as that I can, because as you all do, I think it's so important to speak on behalf of the bodies that we represent, not on behalf of our personal opinions. So I make it a point to listen to all the issues and try and funnel everything that that we really can to the board so that everything's heard at the board level. Some other background, I come from a family of business owners, business people, and educators. And that kind of gives me insight beyond just a student's view into how education affects the state. With an uncle that owns a small company, he'll say, hey, what's going on? We don't have any competent workers. And we'll talk about that over an Easter dinner. And that just makes me reflect on the position at the board level and say that those decisions that we're making in the room aren't hitting the walls. They're hitting the students. They're hitting people in real life. And seeing that on the faces of my family really helps me internalize that and say, this is very important. I need to take this extremely seriously. At Normandale, I'm enrolled in business and accounting courses that have really helped my learnings with the audit committee that I serve on. It's been a great position. I'm very honored to be in this position. And just to reiterate, I'll be drawing on the experiences that I've had in financial management with the band that I started, and as well as with the experiences in the mortgage industry. I'll maintain a close working relationship with the student associations to make sure that their voices are heard. And I'll continue to do my best to improve upon the quality, accessibility, and affordability of our state colleges and universities. Again, I thank you for the opportunity to address you today, and I'll definitely welcome any questions you may have.
Any questions for Mr. England? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I find it interesting you're a non-traditional student, and I'm wondering how that process has been for you, and if you have been able to bring back any recommendations to the board of how they might be helped along their journey, and people encouraged to return to school.
Sure. Yeah,
Mr. England.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Something that we've worked with a lot is our technology and our online class offerings. And I carry the flag pretty heavily on that. I myself take 3 or 4 classes online, and I think that caters to the non-traditional student as directly as we can. So many of the chat room discussions on our class discussion board are from moms with children or from people working the night shift or whatever the case may be, but it is extremely important that we continue to build up that online component of our system. So as far as the non-traditional student goes, I would say that's my number one flag to carry. Beyond that, I just think that the community colleges, you know, as President Obama has said too, they are the fuel, they are the lifeblood, and it's apparent. At Normandale, we're bursting at the seams. You know, the enrollment is through the roof, and there's no space. You know, we make jokes that we're going to have to start sitting on tables and putting sleeping bags in the corner pretty soon. But it's about that close, and I think that demand is so great. So,
do you think we should be putting a cap on enrollment with some of our colleges that are so crowded? I don't know about my niece is planning to go to Normandale, so
sure,
I'm not
sure.
Suggesting it, but.
That question might be a little bit beyond my head. I'm just a few months into my term. From a layman's perspective, I don't think we should cap enrollment. I think we need to open enrollment up to as many people as possible.
Some of our four-year universities do, I think.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Don't they? Senator Roebling.
And one of the things that Normandale has done well in partnership, like they're bringing courses out to Shakopee High School in the evenings. And so they don't need to have the physical space on their campus if they can take it somewhere else. And we, you know, Normandale and many other of these community colleges are in areas where they have some really nice high school facilities. And if you can use their labs, they may be better than yours because they're all brand new buildings in some of the suburban communities. And I really, you know, applaud and encourage that, because those partnerships are important for saving us facilities costs, for one thing, and just better utilizing our current public buildings. And so when things get tight, look around and see what else is out there, and I think they have been doing that.
Sure.
Okay, does someone want to make a motion? Senator Wieger.
I'd be happy to. I'd like to ask one question.
Please.
Madam Chair, Mr. England. Is there any program policy that MNSCU has that you think should be changed? And if so, what is it?
Mr. England.
Thank you. Great question. And I was actually very excited to read the bill that was just put forth. One of my biggest things that I wanted to work towards was taking down that barrier of advertisements at public schools for the post-secondary enrollment option. And I think that is... you took my question, but that's the number one thing that I think we can do. Offer that to our young people. And as someone that came up through the public schools in Minnesota, I didn't know about it. No one knew about it. It was one of those very quiet conversations being held in a secluded room. So.
And you went to Apple Valley High School?
That's correct.
And what year did you graduate?
In 2001.
And we've had this program since... 1980s? The 80s, mid-80s.
Yeah. The majority of the people that have taken advantage of that have been the homeschool population. That, again, just from what I've heard. But.
And Chair, I'll move the recommendation for Mr. England.
Senator Wieger moves that the appointment of Jacob England to the MNSCU Board of Trustees be confirmed. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Hightower.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I am delighted to be before you today, particularly talking about the issue at hand, that's higher education. I would advance to you today that I am an atypical candidate to be sitting here before you, in that I am the product of a single mom who raised eight kids in an urban environment in, down by St. Louis, Missouri, and by faith, I found myself at one of the Minskew institutions, and so I am an alumni of the Minskew system. Since I've been on the board at Minskew, I have had a variety of opportunities. I have served as chair of the Finance Committee for about three years total, chair of the Audit Committee for 1 year. I have also served as vice chair of the board for 1 year. I've had a great number of leadership opportunities in my professional career, 15 years in the YMCA, 12 years as a leader in that system, 5 years as president of an organization called the City Incorporated, and then 10 years as the president of an organization called the Minneapolis Urban League. And then about 8 months ago, I became executive director of an organization called Community Action. And so I have had an opportunity to...
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So I have had an opportunity to practice the leadership that I try and bring to the Minskew system. I, 6 years ago, I wanted to become a trustee of the Minskew system because I know the value of education, particularly for a low-income kid of color. And again, being one of those and finding my way to Southwest State in the mid-70s, I think it was faith that got me there, and I think faith plus hard work could have someone like me sitting in front of you today. And I wish that for all kids. So when I showed up 6 years ago, I showed up with two things in mind. Number one, financial compliance. And so I, for 6 years, have been on the Finance Committee and have really been interested in how we manage finances, how we go through the bonding process. I think I've gone through three bonding processes over the last 6 years. I think I've gone through three or four biennial budget processes. But I've been really interested in how the system finances itself and how we hold the system accountable for the funds that we receive. The other thing that I've been very interested in and committed to is that of diversity. And I am pleased that I was part of the system when we added a diversity committee to the sitting standing committees of our board of trustees. So I come to you humbly saying to you that I have had 6 years as a trustee. It has been a terrific 6 years, and I think my work is not done yet, and I would like the opportunity to continue that for yet another 6 years.
So, Mr. Hightower, you have some tough decisions ahead of you in terms of cuts. So I just liked your opinion as to, you know, what kind of principles are going to guide your decision-making and also what's going to happen with tuition.
Yeah. Well, relative to the – thank you, Madam Chair, members. Relative to the tuition issue, I think all of us board members think have the same thought process that we know that the students have borne the burden of tuition for the last number of years. I think Trustee Dixon and I can remember there was one year where we had like a 12% tuition increase, or and so we have worked hard to par that down. And last year was the lowest tuition increase in a number of years. We love the direction that tuition is going. It's going down. But we also know that students have to be a partner in financing their education. And so, and I think they would agree to that. But to the degree that we can keep it at 2 or 3%, that is absolutely our goal. But you have a lot to do with that in terms of how much money you give us. And so, I mean, that's just been very candid. In terms of very difficult decisions, we have some principles that we honor. One of those principles that we're not making short-term decisions. Our decisions has got to transverse multiple years. Another principle that we hold is that it has to have some kind of economic impact across across the state. We realize that we are an important clog in the economic needs of Minnesota, and so that's one of the principles that we hold. We know that in 10 and 11, it's not as difficult as the out years, 12 and 13. Mm-hmm. And so those are when the really, really difficult decisions are going to have to be made. And
so you sure you want this reappointment?
we are appreciative of the fact that there is some stimulus dollars to help us in these next 2 years right in front of us. But after that, we would not have those dollars. And we're going to have to make some very, very difficult decisions. And I think we're poised to do that. We certainly appreciate this body's respect for the board and how you have traditionally given us the flexibility to make those very, very difficult decisions. We appreciate that. But I think my colleagues and I are prepared to do just that.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hightower, given the segue you just gave me about difficult decisions and the amount of money we give you, we've had the chancellor in front of us talking about what the possibilities were for closing the budget gap that currently exists and the funding that we have to cut because of the way the economy is right now. Are campus closings something that you would consider?
You know,
Mr. Hightower.
Madam Chair, thank you. Senator, I don't know that we have taken anything off of the table. We start with looking at every option that there is available to us, but I don't know that we have not had conversation as a body about closing campuses. Because we have not had that conversation, I would say that it's on the table. I mean, it's within a realm of possibility, but it's nothing that we've talked about.
Yeah, I'm sure. Do you have an opinion on it?
Mr. Hightower.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My opinion would be that if that was the best option, I would not be opposed to it. But it would take some convincing that was the best option. And the reason I position my answer that way is because in small communities, our universities and our colleges are more than educational facilities. They, in a lot of ways, are the economic engine in those very, very small communities. And so if this was on the table, I would want to make sure that we've factored in everything and not just looked at that we can save $6 or $7 million by closing this campus.
Well, and you talked about it's important for the Minsky board to consider the economic impact, and that Absolutely. Certainly would be a consideration there. Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you to the members coming to us today. I guess I really want to comment from all members. I know we have already confirmed two, but maybe we could just back up a little bit. Senator Tomasoni's question was pretty specific related to campus closings, and I'd be interested in hearing other members' opinions on that as well. But my question centered around what I hear a lot about from my district, which is southeastern Minnesota. I represent Winona, so Winona State, opinions about the central campus and all the staff there and no students and the amount of budget that facility takes up. What is your opinion related to the central campus? And I know Ms. Dixon talked earlier about the legislature not being very prescriptive in our directions to you and allowing you to make those decisions. So I'd like to hear how you regard that in terms of where you're looking for cuts.
Let's have Mr. Hightower respond, and you can ask that question of the unconfirmed people. Okay. And then if we have time, maybe we can go back or you could talk to them privately.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm a little conscious about our time right now. Mr. Hightower.
Madam Chair, I think the system is the central office is probably one of the most misunderstood part of our work. I think that it is just an easy target and almost an unfair target. The fact of the matter is that the work that takes place in that office, it 100% benefit the campuses. And if we did not have this concentration of staff working on behalf of the campuses, then what we would probably have is a multiple number of staff at the campuses trying to facilitate the work that happens in this office. We should probably, in my estimation, change the name of the office from Chancellor's Office or to some other name that more adequately describes what happens there. But it's not where all of these staff members work for the chancellor. It's where the system has figured out how to very efficiently get a great deal of work done. And so, you know, every year we take the chancellor to task, and he has to defend what happens in that office, just like the presidents do their work. And I'm very, very comfortable with it. Thank you for asking the question.
And did you want your question about campus closings?
No, that's fine.
Oh, he did answer that.
He did answer that.
Okay.
Already.
Okay. Any more questions or a motion? Senator Sharon.
I'd like to move. What would be the motion?
Senator Sharon moves that the appointment of Clarence Hightower to the Minsky Board of Trustees be confirmed.
That's my motion.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Congratulations, you're confirmed.
Thank you.
And Ms. Sundin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senators. I, in my role as Minsky trustee, has been since my appointment in July by the governor. And I bring a little bit different perspective to the challenges of the Minsky board. I say different, I might say maybe even unique, but through your legislative action last session, you guided, or should we say strongly steered, at least one appointment of the governor to be someone with the qualifications to give voice to the interests and views and the needs of employees in the system. Well, I'm yours, so or I'm it. I bring 40 years of experience in representing workers' interests, and as evidenced by, I think, my vitae that you have. I'm also working with the chancellor to facilitate his relationships with folks in the labor movement, although, as you know, this chancellor doesn't need any facilitating and getting along with people. He does a good job of that. I'm very proud of the fact that workers are flocking to our programs, in particularly the two-year programs, to update and retrain, to keep learning, to keep earning. Two of the schools in our systems you may have read about have responded to the needs of workers, particularly the laid-off workers, by opening their classroom doors to those workers free of charge, and to assist them to gain the skills to get another job. That's innovation, and that is meeting the needs of workers in our state. I bring to the board some expertise and experience in the area of teacher development and professional development and teacher preparation. And just yesterday, we had a meeting where we are considering a pretty big challenge that has been placed before us by the Bush Foundation, and we're going to try to turn into an opportunity to engage in a substantial overhaul and reconfiguration of some of our teacher preparation programs. I hope to at least help make it a substantial overhaul. Another interest is the articulation between K-12 or P-12 and the Minsky system. There, in that arena also, I think we have yet to try any very dramatic innovations in trying to address the rapid changes in the young people that are in K-12 classrooms right now, because there's growing evidence that shows that their physical and mental development is changing very rapidly, much more rapidly than anybody thought. And whether we, in the systems that we are in now, and keeping the same, having a graded system, having a system that ends at grade 12 and then begins in 13 is maybe for a lot of young people outmoded. So I'd like to be involved in some really nifty experiments if we can, to take advantage of the issues that the young people present. Now, your P20 Education Partnership, I think, would have the opportunity to do that. And also, I agree with Trustee England that the advertising, the PSEO opportunity to students in your bill is going to be a good opportunity. I'll give you one example. We had a demonstration right across here at the St. Paul College of a classroom that is a classroom of avatars. And avatars are computer-generated figures that are on a wall, and that's the classroom. And as they come in, they're there from China, and they're there from other parts of the United States. But they're all in this classroom as avatars on the wall. Well, one of the young men who helped create this classroom, the technology of this classroom, was a PSEO student. And he was there starting in grade 11. Now, the other interesting part is that as a young techie, it was very hard for him to articulate what he was showing to us and how they got there. But I thought it was particularly interesting that he started that as an 11th grader. We have made progress, I think, in our challenge to attract and support diverse students of color and to be successful in our institutions and in life. Just last evening, Trustee Dixon and I heard the president of Metro State say that 30% of the students at Metro are persons of color, and that there is no achievement gap at Metro State. And we were very excited to hear that, along with other whole litany of firsts and foremosts that Metro State has had.
It's interesting you should say that. I'll just interrupt for a minute because I'm community faculty at Metro State, and I asked my two top students in my last class to come and intern for me. Well, they both were interested in doing it, and one was an African-American man who was returning to school, and he was like the top writer in my class, and the other one was a young woman who was also a mother, non-traditional student, who's actually from Canada. Yeah, I think I've observed that now as I've taught there over the years, a greater proportion of students of color, more immigrants, mm-hmm. and I had the range. Some of my Somali students were outstanding, and some were still struggling with English, but certainly a higher level of diversity than in the last couple of years.
Well, you're Exhibit A. Thank you, Madam Chair. And it's many of the same challenges that, of course, the P-12 system faces. Mm-hmm. I would say that the Power of You is a program that I'm particularly like, and I think has shown the kinds of support of young people to help young people, particularly urban young people who may be coming from poverty or lack of language to become successful, and I'm glad to see that's in the bill. The bridge program that you have in the bill for the summer transition from high school to college, I think, is a great idea, and I've, in my experience in the past, has been helpful for young people. And finally, I do bring a personal and a professional history of innovation in my own leadership roles through the years, and in reform and creativity as an organizational leader, which I, too, have taught. So I would be honored to receive your confirmation to allow me to continue to serve public education in Minnesota.
Thank you very much for your comments. Would you then comment briefly on this challenge facing the board about cuts and federal stimulus money that's only temporary and tuition?
I'll start with the tuition. I think we, as a board, have, as has already been mentioned, are very cognizant of the increasing burden of the increases in tuition on the students and the kind of outrageous bills that they then are burdened with after they graduate. I think Garrison Keillor says this also, that he was almost embarrassed by how little his college education cost, and I'm kind of old enough so that I'm kind of embarrassed about how little mine cost. But I do think that we're pledging to keep it down this year and in the future. I know that we go to graduations and we remind graduates and the people in the audience and their families that the state of Minnesota pays for more than half of their college education. So we think that that balance needs to be there that we are proud of, but that we're reaching some limits, particularly in some families, of how much it can go up. The question about efficiencies, was that your question?
No, the question was what principles are you using to approach cutting the budget? And Senator Erickson Ropes wanted you to talk about campus closings.
And those are, in a huge system, those are always a challenge. But from my point of view, from my experience in my past lives, I always think we always have to take a really hard look at those services and those people that are far away from classrooms. And I think if we continue to take those hard looks, that there are always savings that can be garnered, and in order to for us to keep budgets within whatever you send and whatever comes from Washington. So I think we need to keep the very Edward Scissorhands look at our services and make sure that they're always as efficient as we can possibly make them. The efficiencies with the central office, and I agree with Trustee Hightower, we need to rename it, but the efficiencies of the central office can always be more efficient. The efficiencies at the various sites of campuses can always be more efficient, but they are two-way efficiencies. So putting more people into the campuses may then be duplication of services, and we don't want to do that. I've forgotten the third one.
Campus closings.
The campus closings it was one of the first questions that I asked when I got on the board. We have campuses that are in areas that are not highly populated. They are small campuses, but I think they serve really important roles, not just in the communities, but in access. Because one of our main goals is access. And if it is access, that right now we don't have 100% access technologically. We may have soon, and at that time we maybe can look harder at closing some campuses. But right now the access of people in greater Minnesota is very important to the health of those communities and training workers and training and educating their people in their community. For instance, I was up at Pine City not too long ago. Pine City is in the middle of the county that is the demographer says that is now the poorest county in the state. Well, if it's the poorest county in the state, they really need Pine County Technical College to be there and to help raise the workers to the place where they can earn a living and not be the county in Minnesota that is the poorest county anymore. And, of course, there's every one of our campuses is in a senatorial district.
Any other questions, or are we ready for a motion? Senator Tomasoni. Oh, Senator Tomasoni moves that the appointment of Louise Sundin to the Minsky Board of Trustees be confirmed. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you very much, and congratulations. And actually, I should say that we are still recommending to the Senate floor that they be confirmed. We actually don't confirm, so maybe that language needs to be altered a little bit. Next, Ms. Thomas.
Hello, Madam Chair and other members. My name is Terry Thomas. I'm the Technical College Student Trustee. I'm at Rochester Community and Technical right now, full-time student, and I have been since August of 2007, which was the first few months after I actually got out of the military, which is an interesting thing because when I left high school, college was not even on my agenda whatsoever. I thought I was going to be in the Army. 20 years hardcore sergeant major when I got out and, you know, have grandkids and tell them all about the Army and all my war stories. After I got in, I realized this is like a 9-to-5. I'm so not a 9-to-5 person. I can't do this. I mean, yeah, I was at the DMZ for 18 and a half months. God forbid anyone that ever has to go there. It wasn't exciting at all. But, I mean, you know, there's different strokes for different.
Where's the DMZ?
South Korea. We're right on the border of North Korea, right. And we have the little guy flying planes all the time. Yeah,
okay.
Not exciting at all. So I took my first college course while I was in South Korea. It was a sociology class, and I was excited about it. Got a C because I was in the field more than I was in class. My instructor probably doesn't even know my name and didn't know it then because I was only there four times out of the whole semester, which was cool because they expected it. We're in a battle zone. Leads me back to the other fact. Got back to college, saw a bunch of people walking around, and literally that's all it is. It's a commuter campus. You know, you go to work, you go to school, and you don't have time to socialize. I didn't like that at all. I love people, so I started walking around and reading a lot of flyers that were posted that I had never noticed before. Student Senate is looking for candidates. How exciting. What the heck is Student Senate? So I go and I talk to them. You know, I sat in on one of the meetings, and I was like, oh, I could probably do this because I had a lot of things to say, and I'm sure they were wondering why I raised my hand so much and I was only a guest. I was like, could I comment on that? And they were like, sure, go ahead. What do you have to say? The next week, I was a student senator, didn't know what I was doing, but I had a lot of things to say, and my contributions helped a lot, I'm sure. Next year, I was student senate vice president. I actually ran for that position. They didn't ask me, and it was interesting. Went to MSCSA, my first conference. I saw that. I was like, oh, this is exciting, too. Where have I been all my life? How come I'm not seeing all these things? Ran for president, got 42% of the vote, and most of them had never met me. But they saw the passion that I had for everything and how I was just ready to get in there and just get it done. I think it was the Army coming back out of me again, maybe, possibly. MSDSA, I was Southeast rep for 2 years, on fiscal committee one of the years. Didn't know anything about the Board of Trustees, and I apologize. One of the administrators at my college said, hey, I see you're super busy. Do you ever sleep? I said, no. Well, good. The Board of Trustees is actually, you know, a good place that would probably suit you, and you could get a lot of your views out. You know, you can listen. You can learn a lot. She didn't tell me the whole truth about everything, how long the meetings are and how much I'm going to learn. You should see some of the material they send in the mail. It's kind of scary. Do I have to memorize this like I did in the Army where we memorized their soldier's manual? No, I didn't, but I learned a lot, and I'm still learning. I think I'm going to be learning the entire 2 years of the term. So thankfully, the governor actually appointed me and had the right dates on the paperwork so I can learn all I can in 2 years. I'll be done at RCTC this spring, going on the Metro State, which is a good choice for me because I like the flexibility of being online. I've been online for 2 years, and goodness, I don't know what it's going to be like sitting in a classroom because I'm usually checking emails, looking at board material. Students forget that I'm a student most of the time, and they're asking me, so when are we going to stop smoking on the campuses? And I'm like, well, you know, can I finish my psychology paper first, and maybe we could talk about it later. And I'm like, oh, you're a student? Really? I thought you worked here. A lot of them don't know, so I like that because they look at me just like I'm one of them, and I am. I went to a conference with MSCSA maybe 2 months ago. I'm sitting in the meetings with all the students, you know, just quiet. Didn't even think they noticed me. One student walks up, so which school are you at? I said, RCTC. Oh, cool. So what are you doing here? You know, I've never seen you at any of the conferences this year. I said, I've been really busy with the Board of Trustees. She said, oh, I'd be so terrified. Aren't they scary? I said, aren't they? All of them. She didn't know I was a trustee until later when they introduced me, and she's telling me all these cool things. She's like, you know, I didn't even know you were a Board of Trustee member. I thought you were one of us. I said, that's because I am one of you. The things that I do aren't because, you know, we're sitting at the table and we're moving all these motions and we're trying to intimidate. We want them to come out and talk to us. We want to know what's going on. And just going to conferences isn't the only thing, because when I walk around campus, I don't see any of those students at the conferences, so I get to know all of them. I was on Facebook for a while. I had to get off because every student in the Minsky system almost was on my friends list. Imagine how many wall postings I had to read, how many emails. So now I got unlimited calling on my phone, unlimited text, and, of course, they use it all. And it's beneficial because now when I'm talking at the meetings, you know, I'm going off of Bob at this campus or Julie at this campus, and I know what students want, and I know tuition is not going to be low. And a lot of them know when they talk to me, they get a real answer, a realistic opinion. If we lower tuition to the point where you're barely paying anything, what about the quality? What about the campus? We need money from tuition to pay for so many things, and they understand that. So when you're making choices, we're making hard choices too. The students are making their choices. You know, instead of buying an iPhone like I bought, most of them will buy a phone that's going to get you the phone calls because they understand, you know, now I have to pay this for tuition. Books is going to cost this much. And we understand that most of us are non-traditional students. We've already worked. We've already seen all these different sides. We know the reality of things. It's just that when you're making decisions, don't think that the students don't know, because we do. And that's why I got appointed, because I know exactly what's going on, because I don't have a choice. Because they send me the material, I read it, and I understand the quality of education. The access is important. Coming from a family that's biracial, you go in a room with our family, you think we're all visitors or tourists because we all look so different. It is amazing. We have family everywhere, but we get along just fine because we all have the same goals in heart. You know, we love each other. We love what we do in life. And that's the same way I feel about being on the board. We all came from different walks of life, but we all have the same goals, the same focus, and we want to see this state grow as well as everything else. Because if we're a model for the world, the rest of the USA, that's scary. One state out of all of the states we have, that means we have a lot of weight to carry. Not saying that it's weighing us down because we're doing good, but, you know, we could be better, and that's what all of us are here to do. So if, you know, you confirm me or at least present it to the next place it has to go, then that's a good thing, because there's going to be other students, and there are other students that look up to me. They say, you know, well, if Terry can do it, if she can go without sleep for 2.5 years, then I'm sure I could do it too. You know, it's worth it. And I still have a high GPA. I still work hard as I can to make sure that they're knowing the importance of education. Once you get there, you don't just relax. You work hard to get further and do other things, because the economy as well as the rest of this world depends on us, whether we see it or not. Thanks.
All right, Senator Erickson-Rubbs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Thomas. As another woman veteran, I want to thank you for your service. And then just a comment on the DMZ part of it. I've been there myself and found it to be extremely hostile, very tense, a little strip of the world, so I'm glad you had a good experience there. I wonder if you would have a comment on the other questions we've asked the other members in relation to campus closings and the central office.
Okay. I'm going to start with the central office to get the heat off first, and then I'll cool off later with the rest. The first meeting I had, I heard someone in the audience, you know, talking about it in the hall, maybe about the central office and how if we changed the name, maybe that would help. They do a lot of work. When we had our board tour and they were showing all of the new trustees, all of the things that go on, I heard a, you know, member say that, well, we sent out over a certain 100,000 W-2s to all of the students and people in the Minsky system. If we had an outside company do that, imagine how much that would cost. They do all of the work from, you know, our technology for the online classes and everything. If they didn't do it, then we'd have to pay someone else to do it. So either way, it's a benefit. I mean, the title, yeah, we could change the title. We could change a lot of things, you know, that we do differently. But central offices need to remain, because if they don't, then we're going to ask you guys for more money. And as far as campus closings, I've gone to campuses where I didn't see a single student probably while I was there, but when you look at all the partnerships they have with the different clinics and hospitals, if we close them, what's that hospital supposed to do if it's the only one in the area for, let's say, 100 miles or so? you know, they don't have any skilled workers anymore, and we're producing a lot of those skilled workers, so I wouldn't suggest closing them unless we had enough evidence. Like Clarence said, if we had, you know, if I was convinced that this is the absolute final thing that we could do, then I guess we'll close it, but we'll make sure first that we accommodate those people, you know, wherever we can before we make that decision, because we need all the campuses we can. We got Normandale overcrowding. You know, maybe we could convince some of those people to go to other schools. So there goes marketing, promote any other schools as well, which we probably, you know, do well enough anyhow. But, yeah.
Well, members, we got started about a half hour late, so we're going to have to rush. Senator Lynch moves that the appointment of Terry Thomas to the Minsky Board of Trustees be recommended to be confirmed. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you very much. Yes, Ms. Sundin?
It's up to go to Metro State. Washington. Sounds like there's a senatorial candidate here.
Yeah. Where do you live again?
Senator Pappas. I'm in 3rd District.
Senator Pappas,
third district. Before you leave, I would just like to make one comment. I would have asked this question if I'd thought of it earlier, and that is that we had a meeting. You invited members of the Higher Education Committee to meet with you, and I wasn't able to stay for the luncheon afterwards. I just want you to know that I didn't feel as though the opportunity for real dialogue occurred in that environment. And I would really like, as you have your meetings, to talk about something that we can get together outside of your meeting time, because that became your priority. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have the dialogue. And there's a number of things that you talked about today that I think deserve much more articulation and interaction between us. So please think about how we might be able to do that, even if it's during the interim when we're not as busy here in the Senate, because there were a number of things that were said here that I would have loved to have had more time to exchange with you about, but we don't have the time today.
St. Paul College has a great culinary arts program. We could all get together for lunch sometime and discussion. That would be great. Thank you very much. Members, we have a couple people who weren't able to make it today, and Allison Luneberg is a student, and she's only been appointed for 1 year, maybe to serve out someone's term or something. So I think that maybe we should go ahead and confirm her, or she just will be gone and won't get confirmed at all. Do people have any objection? We have a little bit about her resume, and she's from Wisconsin. Oh. She's the State University student member and from Winona. So, Senator Erickson Ropes, good.
I'd like to move that.
Well, move that Allison Luneberg, that the appointment of Allison Luneberg to the Minnesota Board of Trustees be recommended to be confirmed. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Okay, now Mr. Pashkash was not able to be here with us, and he has a longer term. He has an 8-year term, and I really would like the opportunity to have him come to the committee, you know, at some time at his convenience. So we'll just, I think we'll hold off on that. Chancellor, Did you want to say something?
We'll get him back here.
Okay, we'll get him back here. Great. Okay, then let's bring up the folks that are here for the Higher Education Facilities Authority. We have two people who were able to make it, and thank you for waiting through the whole committee, and please introduce yourselves, and why don't you say a little bit about yourselves, and if you're a new appointee, or it looks like you've been appointed for a while here. Okay, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the Senate Higher Education Committee. My name is Gary Benson, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here today to present myself for consideration of confirmation for what would be my 3rd term on the Minnesota Higher Education Facilities Authority. I was originally nominated for appointment by Governor Ventura, and my 2 subsequent appointment nominations have come from Governor Pawlenty. Mm-hmm. And I know your time is short. I'd like to quickly give you a little bit of my background and what I feel I bring to the authority as far as expertise. First of all, Minnesota Higher Education Facilities Authority, the work of our authority is to consider applications for bonding funding for projects from the private colleges and universities of the state of Minnesota. So the work of what we're doing in our eight-member authority board is to look at applications, feasibility of the projects, the financial feasibility. And my background, I've spent 35 years in the construction industry since graduating, or actually since getting my bachelor's degree from Augsburg College, one of the colleges, in the mid-70s. And the last two decades of my career has been predominantly in educational facilities, both in K-12 and higher ed. And as we get applications to consider projects from the universities and colleges in the state, one of the things I bring is the expertise to look at them in terms of construction feasibility, cost that they're proposing, and look at from that standpoint before as the committee discerns on these applications and considers them. I think that's to honor your time schedule.
Okay.
That's what
why
I'd
don't
like
we
to
hear
present.
From the other gentleman then?
My name is. Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me to speak here today. My name is Raymond Vinzant, and I am up for my second term with the Higher Education Facilities Authority. Just a little bit about myself. I'm the oldest son of 17 children, and I came from a very poor background, from East L.A. I speak two languages, Spanish and English. My cousins were Colombian drug lords, and I did quite a bit of time in jail when I was a kid, and realized before I turned 18 that I never wanted to do that again. So I joined the military and served in the Navy during Vietnam. I was injured in the military and was released with an honorable discharge under medical conditions, and went to work for my dad's two-man Operation Plumbing Company, which then I ended up taking over because he ended up in the hospital. So I decided that L.A. was not a place for me, so I came to Minnesota to get away from it, whereby I owned my own plumbing business, became a master plumber, and then I sold my business in 1997 to Roto-Rooter because they wanted a St. Paul business. I became their training coordinator, and after becoming their training coordinator, I became their writer, their national writer. So I write their papers and stuff online and answer all their questions. And in doing that, I realized there was a need for apprentices in the state of Minnesota, which were not part of the union program. So I wrote a complete plumbing program for Anoka Technical College and got it approved and funded. And we set off, and we now have two full classes going. We've been going for 5 years. I became their first teacher. But I went completely through the entire plumbing program, up from being apprentice, journeyman, master, project manager, estimator, business owner. And all of that experience then was brought into the trade and into the field. It's that experience that I look at when I'm looking at projects like Gary. Right. So I've done this without a college education, but realizing that a college education is necessary. Mm. My three daughters have all gone through college. My oldest is a Japanese translator, lives in Japan. My middle daughter is at Mankato State, or University of Mankato, Minnesota. Anyway, my youngest daughter is also going to Mankato. And we'll be graduating in a couple of years. So I've pushed for education. I see how important it is, especially for minorities. It's a bridge that can take them out of poverty, and I see that because I grew up in poverty. And I was lucky. I was lucky that I didn't fall into the traps of my cousins and become a drug lord. And I was lucky, you know, I just made a decision. I had to leave Minnesota, leave Los Angeles, or I never would be anything. But education is what does it. Education is the most important thing we can pass on to our children and to future generations, and especially minorities. If we can get them an education, it will get them out of poverty and give them hope. I had no hope as a child. They can have hope with education. They can see what other people are doing, and they can follow in those footsteps. It's that type of passion that I bring with me in my quest to serve a second term.
Well, thank you. We appreciate your passion. We don't often find a lot of passion on the Higher Education Facilities Authority. It's pretty...
Yes.
We don't either.
Non-passionate. It's good to have somebody who'll shake things up a little bit.
I have to maintain myself during the meetings.
Does someone want to make a motion? We could do them together. People, can we do that? Do them separate? Okay, make a motion for one.
Chair, I move that the that Raymond P. Vincent, mm-hmm. Be recommended for confirmation to the full Senate.
For the Higher Education Facilities Authority.
Right.
Great. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Wieger.
Chair, move Mr. Benson's nomination.
Senator Wieger moves that the appointment of Gary Benson to the Higher Education Facilities Authority be recommended to the full Senate. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you both
very much,
and thank you for your patience for waiting. Okay, now, members, we have three people. They were appointed in 07, so we hadn't gotten around to confirming them. And do we want to wait until they can come before us? Let's see. We have Janet Winthrop from Orono, Catherine Brewer from St. Paul, and Mary Ives from Itasca. And I don't know anything about them, or I don't think anyone is here to tell us anything about them. So are these reappointments?
This is the Facilities Authority.
That's my question. Where does it say that they're reappointments? First page? Reappointment, replacing. Okay, Mary Ives and Catherine Brewer are reappointments. Probably they've been before us before.
Well, Madam Chair.
And Janet Winthrop is replacing Christopher Nelson.
Madam Chair, I would move Mary Ives just because, based on her current volunteer leadership and board leadership experience, she's one of these people that if you want somebody to get something done, you give it to somebody who's too busy to do it. And so.
Well, and I'm proud of you for recommending a Republican.
Well.
Did you notice that?
No, I didn't. but
you're going to recommend her anyway.
It seems to me that
yeah, look at this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's quite a volunteer.
Huge.
And she wants reappointment. Okay, Senator Tomasoni moves that the appointment of Mary Ives, reappointment of Mary Ives to the, what's it called? Higher Education Facilities Authority be recommended to the full Senate. Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. And what about the other two? This is someone in my district. I should know her. Catherine Brewer. And this is also a reappointment, so she's probably been before us. She doesn't know her house district number. 50B, that's all right. And we don't have her resume, so we don't know about her.
I guess it's received in 2006.
Reappointment. What do you think?
Madam Chair?
Yeah. Senator Erickson Ropes.
Well, perhaps the last three, since we have to revisit Mr. Paskash.
Paschal.
Anyway, it looks like Janet Withoff is replacing someone, so she'd
be new.
Probably need to come before us. So
it'd
we
be
get
good
a chance
to have her
to
come before us.
Perhaps, and at that time, we could look at Catherine Brewer as well.
Okay, is that okay with everybody? I wish I did know her because she lives right downtown, but I don't. So, okay. Anything else to come before the committee? Is this We'll have to ask Miss Ryan, wherever you are. She's watching us on TV. Do we have anything else to do this year? Are we done? Is this our last meeting?
Well, we'd have to do this.
What? Not necessarily this year. Okay. Yeah, this doesn't have to happen this year.
Oh, okay.
Madam Chair, this one is really old. I mean, not the woman, but this came in 2006.
Which one?
The Brewer one.
Kathleen Brewer.
Yeah.
It says effective 2007.
But the date of receipt.
Oh.
of the application?
It's a reappointment. Should we go ahead and do her? All right. Senator Roebling moves that the appointment of Catherine Brewer to the Minnesota Higher Education Facilities Authority be recommended to the full Senate. Maybe we could get a little more information about her before we get to the full Senate.
Okay.
Okay. Yes? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed nay. Motion prevails. We might have to have another meeting. So we can hold off on during the interim. We can't do it during the interim. We can't confirm during the interim. It has to go to the full Senate. So you said we should.
We should.
Oh, because there's a rule you have to confirm by so many days or it gets pulled to the full Senate.
Right.
So we're at our limit
this one
here.
Must have been there.
We should do it, and we can check it out.
Is that apply to Poshkosh, too, or just Janet? Both of them? We could send them to the floor without recommendation, because we have to. Or should we meet again and see if they can come in another day?
Meet again.
They were notified.
Let's get some information.
We could send them to the floor and then, no? Well, they get pulled to the floor anyway. Yeah. Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair.
Deadline.
With all due respect to these candidates, I think that it's entirely acceptable that this committee have information and ask them to come and visit with us.
I mean, what's happened sometimes before is when people couldn't make it, they've sent an emissary or somebody. You know, they've had the staff person talk about them, or they could have had the chancellor, you know, or a staff person talk about them if they couldn't make it, or sent a letter. So what happens, Mr. Fuller? They get automatically pulled to the floor by before the end of this session? Well, this was July 2nd, 2008, and this is 2007.
We could at least have them on a speakerphone.
With the rule?
Well,
we can do nothing, and then the rules will go into play where they get pulled. I think they can get pulled to the floor. I think they can get sent back to committee on the floor.
Yes, it can.
Yeah, so we can just do that. Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, and I'll just comment. There are, particularly today, there are so many options available to communicate with the division.
Do you remember the communication we got back from them at all or nothing?
Nothing.
Nothing.
We sent letters and then.
We sent letters and phone calls, and I also think Ms. Fanning from Minsky was also trying to help us. Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yet, we could have gotten an email saying, you know, they wouldn't be here today, and here's some of my input.
Yeah. Well,
people could have teleconferenced in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with respect to the candidates who did come.
They spent all several hours here.
I think it would not hurt us to convene again very quickly, have another meeting, and try to get
Well,
some
I think
sort
as
of
I recall, thing. What happens is the rule they go to the floor is so chairman can't hold up confirmations indefinitely. So they go to the floor so that the rest of the body can decide. If the rest of the body doesn't care, they can send them back to us. And then we'll just, you know, we'll just hold it over till next year. Yep.
I think they should do that.
And we didn't get them? Yeah. The Higher Education Facilities Authority told us they were going to send something, some documents for people who couldn't attend, and we didn't receive them. So I don't know what the mix-up was. But so I guess we can take no action then. Okay? Yes, yeah, Senator Letts?
Yeah, I'd support that. If there was a miscommunication, which we owe it to ourselves to find out, then we can address that. I don't mind coming back to revisit. I'm not comfortable making any decisions without some information about the candidates.
Okay.
I also think, frankly, out of respect to the candidates who did come here, that we shouldn't confirm someone who hasn't made the effort to communicate with us, either through their institution or directly. I'd be inclined, frankly, to recommend denial of a confirmation if someone completely ignored our request for information. Otherwise,
process as a chef.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be my inclination.
Yeah, we can always change it.
Is that a motion?
The position we don't know the answer to subject that. To Senate confirmation at all if they're simply going.
Well, first we should check on this communication issue.
And if that's the case, I'm happy to come back at a time when you can provide us with information or appear in person.
Okay. Okay. Now all that's left is our farewell party.
Sandy's office.
Clear the calendar.
And she actually is new, so that's she's worn out. I think it's okay. We can just give another chance. I think that we haven't for candidates who've been involved in this process for a while. Maybe we've made it more optional for them to come or not. And we're actually trying to do more due diligence and actually take these confirmations more seriously. So we really should give them the benefit of the doubt, give them another chance. So, okay, any other comments from anyone? All right, the meeting is adjourned.